pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Rock and roll, Chairman.
Go ahead with the roll call, please.
Mr. Adams?
Present.
Mr. Batzel?
Here.
Mr. Givney?
Here.
Mr. Greiner is excused. Mr. Howell?
Here.
Mr. Kesselring?
I think I hear you in the lobby.
And Mr. Schott is excused. We have a quorum, sir.
All right. Just barely. But we'll move forward. Read the notes, please.
Cases heard by the Planning and Zoning Commission will be presented to City Council in accordance with the schedule provided after each case in the agenda. Please note that the City Council meetings will begin at 4 o'clock p.m. and are held at City Hall, City Council Chambers, second floor, located at 110 Southeast Wautula Avenue.
All right. Did we have minutes?
No. The minutes were withdrawn.
Okay. All right. So we'll go ahead and move forward with the first case. Land Use and Zoning, LUC 12-004-ZON 12-005. 5-7.
Did you get that right?
Somewhere in there.
Okay.
We're good. All right, Patty. Me and Pete.
Thank you. This is a request by M2PCD LLC to change 5.86 acres of property from medium density residential to retail services and from R1A single family residential, R2 two family residential, and GU to B2 community business. Property is located at the southwest corner of Silver Springs Boulevard, West Silver Springs Boulevard, and Southwest 24th Avenue. The property is undeveloped, two parcels, and the portion of the property that's designated GU is occupied by the West Ocala Police Substation. Council entered into a purchase and sale agreement with the applicant for that portion of the property that's zoned GU. In April of 2012, there are hurdles that the applicants have to hit in order to purchase and develop the property. One of them is to get the zoning changed and the land use changed. We haven't received the development plan at this point. However, the indications of the applicant are that it was intended to be developed as retail center, most likely with a grocery store at that location. This was one of the locations that the consultant considered for the possible development of a grocery store in West Ocala. The existing land uses are medium density, as I said, medium density residential, which is primarily residential district, which allows up to 12 units per acre. Public buildings and facilities, which is intended for governmental uses and institutional uses. The underlying zoning classifications are R1A, a single family district that requires 80 linear feet of frontage and a minimum of 8,000 square feet. R2, which is single and two family residential and government use. The requested land use is retail services, which is typically developed as retail and business establishments, and B2 community business to implement that land use designation, which is intended for community business from low to middle intensities that include retail sales. Staff recommends approval. The impacts that are included in your staff report is, as you can see, traffic study will be required if more than 100 trips are created by the development that's proposed. The infrastructure at the location is adequate, and the area is typified by commercial development at that corner, and as we move forward into the 2035 plan, we've designated the corner that includes these parcels as low intensity, with the thought that this would likely develop as a commercial that extended out to the corner of 27th Avenue and State Road 40. Any questions? Thanks.
The petitioner like to get up and speak about the project? Anyone? All right. Any public comments? All right, bring it back to the board. Any discussion?
If there's no discussion, I'll move to approve.
I'll second.
Mr. Batso?
Aye.
Mr. Adams?
Aye.
Mr. Howell?
Aye.
Mr. Gibney?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay. All right, now to the next item. Lubo PUD 12-0002.
Ty Chickasaw, Growth Management Department. This case, as you know, is the Magna Ocala 489 property. To get to this point for the Lubo, we've had multiple hearings over the last few years, starting in 08 is when we adopted our Lubo policy and our comp plan, which would allow us to do a Lubo. Ocala 489 at that point came in and did a land use change based on medium industrial, light industrial, and retail services. In 09, they adopted the zoning, the M1, the M2, and the B2. And that's kind of where we are with the property until this year. Back in the spring, we adopted a land use amendment to allow the Lubo, which has to be in two stages. One is the land use, and now this is the zoning, to allow them over the land use comp plan amendment to allow them to blend of zones for the comp plan based on the three land use categories of light, medium, and retail services. Last month, y'all, or just this month, 2 weeks ago, y'all looked at adopting a Lubo PUD code requirement. That was kind of the next step. And then the final step is what we're doing tonight is adopting the Lubo zoning requirement for the PUD. And that will finally get us to the point where there will be no further public hearings on the Lubo portion of it. And again, what the Lubo does is allow the applicant to take those three land uses and zonings and allow them to move them around on the property, stay within the same boundaries, stay within the same acreage requirements. So if you have 32 acres of retail, you could continue to have the 32 acres, but you could move them depending on what is the development pattern occurring on the property. So it gives the applicant flexibility, and that's the whole intent was the Lubo, to give the applicant flexibility from the land use and zoning standpoint that you're not bound by those actual meets and bound descriptions of those land uses that and zonings that was adopted back in 08 and 09. So that's kind of where we are now. This is kind of the final step. Next step is actually getting approved for council the PD ordinance for the Lubo, which y'all recommended for approval last meeting, and then this will go at the same time the Lubo zoning. So the applicant's here, you can answer any further questions. There was somewhat of a change. The road alignment has changed from previous drafts in the master development agreement. That's most probably the most significant change that has occurred on the property. And the applicant's here if he wants to ask any questions, or if y'all have any questions for me now.
Any questions for Ty? Mr. Gray, would you like to address it again, or? Does anybody have any questions? All right, any comments? Any public comments? Anyone here for or against? Back to the board.
I'll make a motion to approve. Excuse me.
Second. All right.
Mr. Adams?
Aye.
Mr. Howell?
Aye.
Mr. Batson?
Aye.
Mr. Gibney?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Moving forward. Comp plan text amendment, CPTA 12-0001. Mr. Daniels?
Hi, my name is Mike Daniels. Work for the Growth Management Department. Since the March P&Z meeting, when we presented the comp plan changes to this board, we've had a number of meetings to address some of the issues that came up during that meeting. We've met with our leadership group a number of times to talk about the comp plan. We've met with the West Ocala Steering Committee, as well as had meetings with Mr. Curry and Mr. Gray to address some of the issues that they had. We've also had some meetings with the city's land use attorney, and we've also had inter-city staff meetings with the engineering department, the public works department, including stormwater and traffic, as well as meetings with the water and sewer department and community revitalization department to make sure that we're all on the same page, and if they have any issues with any of the changes we're making, make sure that we're consistent throughout the city, as well as with the developers, with the private development community. I'd like to introduce Curtis Trotkin, Lawrence Lewis from VHB, and what they'll do is they'll go through all of the changes that we've made since the March P&Z meeting and answer any questions that you have.
Thank you, Mike. Curtis Trotkin with VHB Miller Sellen. We're at 225 East Robinson in Orlando. As Mike mentioned, I have Mr. Lawrence Lewis with me today, who is a transportation planner and engineer, and we also have Bill Ray of Ray of Associates, Planning and Environmental. This request today is to consider amending four different elements: the future land use element, the transportation element, the recreation and open space element, and the capital improvements element, and we'll go through each of those, the highlights of those individually. We're also recommending a deletion of three different elements: the historic preservation, the community redevelopment area element, and the public schools facilities element. As you know, our involvement with the city started with the 2035 vision, which we completed in 2010, and the next steps from that were to incorporate that into the city's comprehensive plan. Mike went over all of the outreach we've had over the last year or so. Go ahead, Lawrence. As you know, we've had workshops with both this commission and city council. We had a public hearing in March with the commission. And then since had a number of additional meetings, as Mike said, within the departments, with the city attorney, with the Department of Economic Opportunity, who was formerly known as Department of Community Affairs up in Tallahassee. And we believe that the package we're bringing forward today is the consensus of all those departments. These amendments are based on the 2035 vision. Staff will separately be doing the evaluation and appraisal report next year, as well as any amendments that result from that evaluation appraisal report. Generally, what we'd like to do tonight is focus on the changes since our March meeting. You all have received a copy of the full text of the amendments, proposed amendments, and so what we'll do is we'll go over the highlights of what has been changed since then. We're happy to talk about anything in detail if you wish, but we decided to focus on what was either changed or there was significant discussion at our last meeting on. There are minor text changes throughout for consistency. previously, many of the elements started with a verb, and what we wanted to do is say that the city shall do something just for consistency throughout, so it provides a cleaner look. We also, there was some discussion about dates and whether or not they were appropriate at our last commission public hearing. And what we did is we removed many of the dates, but we kept the ones that we thought were the most critical based upon current city priorities or the priorities of groups such as the Division Leadership Group or the West Ocala Steering Committee, and then also taking into account, like I said, any current city projects or planned city projects. And finally, we wanted to keep in the spirit that the future projects needs to evaluate the 20, or staff needs to evaluate current projects against the 2035 vision. As we mentioned previously, what we did is we created a new goal at the front of the future land use element, and there's new objectives 1 through 10 through there that are directly related to the 2035 vision and its implementation. Following that are the previously adopted future land use element policies, which start in 11 through 19. So the future land use element is a fairly substantial reorganization. So it starts with the vision as the preamble, and it's adopting policies after that. One of the more significant tasks was updating the city's future land use map. There are currently, 12 or 14 different land use districts, and what we've tried to do is consolidate them down into something that would be similar to what was adopted in the 2035 vision, which was 4 different land use categories. In the end, we ended up with 7, and I'll show you a map that shows you the process we went through. But in order to do this, we had to take a look at every single parcel and make sure that we didn't take away anybody's development rights in that process of changing some of the land use designations. But one of the things we're trying to do is help to simplify the city's land use map. This is our proposed future land use map. The red is the high intensity central core. I guess it's a salmon color now, is the low intensity areas, which are primarily along these the corridors. The peach is the, and we have a pointer, shows the medium intensity areas, or the special districts that are also a mixture of uses. The yellow is the neighborhood designation, and the gray is the employment center, and green is public area. And one of the changes we did is we made the colors more consistent with a traditional land use map, where yellow is a residential color, and red is a commercial color. Previously, I think we had blue or purple for the neighborhood, which we thought it would be better to go to a more conventional look. We've made some minor adjustments based upon a further look at some of the properties and the context around them, and I'll go through those briefly. On Southeast 17th Street, along this corridor here, we changed that from low intensity to neighborhood, again, based on the surrounding properties and the context of that road. We thought it was more appropriate that it remains that it has a more primarily residential designation. In West Ocala, you can see downtown is here. We had a medium intensity, or this salmon color, across here, which is now gray. We determined that would be most appropriate as an employment center use. There's 3 different proposed changes from the last map you saw on this one. First of all, at the Parkside area, which was previously neighborhood, I'm not very good at doing this left-handed. We determined that should be a part of the high intensity or central core, based on the connectivity to downtown there. At 27th Avenue and State Route 40, we changed that from neighborhood to low intensity. And then finally, down here at Southwest 17th Street, we determined that this would be an appropriate place for an employment center,
that rather than a continuation of the low intensity along that corridor.
This is a summary of the proposed future land use classifications, and the only changes from our last meeting are to add the name of the central core. We added high intensity to the front of that to remain consistent with the original 2035 vision, which called it high intensity in the downtown area. We also increased the maximum intensity before incentives for the low intensity category from 0.5 floor area ratio to 0.75. And this is a reflection of what is on the ground today. And there are some areas in the low intensity that, for example, have, you know, six story hotels. So we want to make sure that we can continue to accommodate those and don't mistakenly create a non-conforming use. We have a number of proposed text amendments that are, again, changes from our last public hearing. In the low intensity category in policy 6.3, there were some comments before about the heights of buildings and whether or not it's appropriate to include the number of stories in the comp plan. We agreed with that comment, and we took out the building heights, which were described in stories, from all of the land use categories. But I remember in particular the low intensity one was highlighted because of the hotels along those corridors. As I mentioned, we increased the floor area ratio from 0.5 to 0.75. In the neighborhood category in policy 6.4, previously we had some specific language about the spacing and location for non-residential uses. And we have removed that to provide some more flexibility, so it's not a strict half-mile separation. That gives staff the ability to work with an applicant at the land development code level to find the most appropriate places for non-residential uses. Policy 6.5, we removed a reference to intercity rail transit from the employment center. We thought that was a very good catch by the public at our last meeting. Since that was not looking to be feasible in our foreseeable future. Objective 9, we had a listing of best practice design guidelines, and we thought rather than encouraging those or promoting those at the comprehensive plan level, we would be establishing those as the city creates form-based codes in the land development code. And again, that provides a little bit more flexibility at the local level rather than being adopted part of the plan itself. There were comments at our last meeting about wastewater provision, and we've met with the city attorney and the utility providers to amend some of the language, propose amendments to some of the language. And what we've done is provide references back to the Florida statute reference 367.111 that provide the specific criteria used for wastewater connections. We also changed policy 12.3.1, which previously required the developer to provide that water and sewer extension. Now it could be negotiated. It doesn't specifically say who does that. In the spirit of the last policy change, we changed in 17.4 the stormwater management criteria to be consistent with applicable water management districts, rather than using the criteria that is provided in the outstanding Florida water requirement. Again, we believe it's better to be consistent with the district standards there. Since we are doing a large-scale change to the plan, to the entire map, we wanted to make sure that there were grandfathering policies that protect existing uses. And what we've done in policy 13.4 is establish a provision within the land development code that will take into account existing or permitted uses before the adoption of this comprehensive plan. So that's language we worked out with the city attorney for your consideration. Policy 18.1 is a policy that precedes all of the specific land use policies for specific properties Many of those were subject to development orders or were a part of a development of regional impact development order. So this policy, again, provides a grandfathering clause for all of the following policies. And we've added the specific parcel numbers to each of those policies for clarity. We added, as we mentioned before, a historic preservation goal to the future land use element. This was language that was moved from the historic preservation element, which we are proposing for deletion because we think it's better served within the future land use element. We had this language reviewed by the Historic Preservation Advisory Board, and the only changes were some minor text formatting for consistency that say that the city shall do it rather than leaving it open-ended and who has to perform the policy. Morris, do you want to go over the transportation changes?
Most of the transportation changes were also minor. There were changes to address consistency similar to the future land use element, and also just adding language to make sure that transportation projects are evaluated consistent with the 2035 vision. And in terms of the transportation policy changes, there were changes to the level of service standards for roadways. And so just to go over those quickly, the changes reflected in the current draft are that for city and county facilities, the adopted level of service standard is E. And then for state facilities, the level of service standard is level of service D plus 10%, which is basically between D and E numerically. And then for facilities that are part of this SIS, a level of service standard of C. And this is a graphic just to show in terms of traffic conditions how the levels of service relate relatively. So E is kind of right at capacity, A is free flow, and F is gridlock. So the levels of service range from C to E depending on the facility type.
Excuse me. At the previous hearing, we presented to you the proposed changes to the recreation and parks element, which were principally made to incorporate the 2010 Parks Master Plan, Recreation and Parks Master Plan. We have not made any changes to the text since that, but we wanted to make sure that the commission knew that. We made some amendments to the capital improvements element that were not previously presented. These are mostly made in following the Community Planning Act of 2011, which had some pretty sweeping growth management regulation changes that eliminated the need for concurrency, financial feasibility, or the unfunded cost summary for the capital improvements element. We removed the distinction between the Category A and Category B public facilities. Because we did not need to state the funding source for those. We also, the capital improvements element also describes the level of service for all of the public facilities within the city. We retained concurrency and level of service for transportation and recreation and parks, although it's not required anymore within the capital improvements element. But we did remove the level of service for drainage, water, sewer, solid waste, and schools, and those are found in their individual elements. We retained the school interlocal agreement language, although we have proposed that the public school facilities element, which is no longer required, be deleted. We have put in a new schedule. Previously, back in, I guess it was 2006, the state required you to update it every year, and that was somewhat contentious because many communities were not able to do that, but the city has been very good about updating their capital improvements schedule annually, and so they have continued to do that with a new 5-year date range going out to 2016, and then changing some proper names within the element from the Department of Community Affairs to the Department of Economic Opportunity, as well as other minor formatting changes. The three elements recommended for deletion are the community redevelopment area element. This is an optional element. It's not required by state statutes. And as you know, the city is currently considering the adoption of three new community redevelopment areas. So this may be revisited in the future, but at this time, we're recommending deletion of it. There are many future land use element policies that cover redevelopment already. The historic preservation element, we are recommending for deletion because we've moved those policies to the future land use element as a new goal. And the public schools facilities element, as I mentioned, is no longer required by state statutes. The city has been in contact with the Marion County School Board to discuss that, and it was agreed upon that it can be removed from the comprehensive plan by those parties. I'll take questions, but we are requesting your recommendation for approval to City Council. And if this board or this commission were to take action, these transmittal public hearing would be scheduled for August 21.
Any questions?
I've got a few. You guys did a great job with this. I know this has been hours and hours, so thank you. One of my first thing I want to address is policy 3.7 and the transportation element, the mobility fee. It's still, in my opinion, just presents a real ambiguity, just because I'm asking for clarification. But you know, it starts to lay out factors, I guess, that should go into the determination of what a reasonable mobility fee is and how we structure it. But then some of those elements just really, to me, and I'm thinking of it in the old, you know, transportation impact fee framework of, you know, you're going to pay for changes that are necessary because of your development of the property. And that makes sense. And I know that they need to be reasonably related to what you cause when you come in and your footprint causes. My concern with the mobility fee is that if we're incorporating road diets and we're landscaping and all the, which is all wonderful, but if it's going to be unreasonably borne by, you know, a new developer who's just may need to change the location of a traffic light, we're getting a little far, you know, we're getting a little far afield, and it's no longer reasonable in terms of the impact of that property. So can you just explain to me how you see this working, practically speaking, the mobility fee?
Sure, I will turn to my subject matter expert on that.
The way that, and that's actually a very good question a lot of local governments are still working through now, the way that it would work is that it really provides flexibility to identify what kinds of improvements occur as a result of an impact. So under the traditional transportation impact fee system, the idea is that someone's paying and it just goes towards roads. But under a mobility fee system, there is more of a connection between land use and form and transportation. And so there may be areas where the city doesn't want a roadway to be widened, or the priority in terms of transportation improvements might be for transit or for bicycles and pedestrians. So there's really nothing that is holding anyone's hand to requiring a certain type of improvement. But the idea with the mobility fee is that at least there's a flexibility to decide what kinds of improvements are necessary or desired by the city, and that's the kind of flexibility that the city doesn't have under a traditional impact fee system.
So would there be, is there some kind of, and maybe this is happening in other cities and everything, but what's a typical formula for determining what a mobility fee, how a mobility fee is generated? I mean, in terms of what one developer, you know, in one area is going to pay on a given property.
I'm trying to think of how to explain this without getting into the weeds too much, but there are two different approaches. One is basically looking at specific improvements. So looking at a range of transportation improvements, whether it's roadways or bicycle pedestrian facilities, taking the overall cost of that entire system and then allocating it to new growth. And then another system, and that's called needs-based. And then another system basically looks at location and how much VMT, vehicle miles, travel development will have, and then has a tiered system. So for instance, if your development is in a place where you might have more bicycle, pedestrian, or transit use, your fee might be lower than in a location where driving is the only option. And so there are options for how the fee can be structured, but those are the two basic approaches.
Okay, and there's no, I mean, I know we're just in the early stages now, but one or the other isn't something that has been talked about in terms of the basis for our mobility fee? Do you know?
Not to my knowledge. Okay. Staff can...
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the key elements, obviously, if we're going to implement a mobility fee is a discussion with the county. Because what we've said all along is we don't want to have a mobility fee on top of the existing impact fee that we currently, you know, currently pay to the county. So that's why we put a date on that. We need to work that out with the county, make sure they're comfortable with the mobility fee that we set up. And it may be that if we set up a mobility fee that the county would want areas of the county, certain areas that they want to also participate in the mobility fee. So it really will take a lot of coordination with them. What we did though is we kept our existing concurrency system so that if we can't work anything out with the county by this date, then we'll come back at that time and say, okay, either we can't work that out and we're going to have to try to develop a new strategy, or we'll just fall back on the old system. So we definitely wanted to put that date specific so we didn't just kind of leave it there and never get back to it. But in terms of the specifics, we really have to work that out with the county, and we have not done that yet.
Okay. Well, I'll just say my only concerns, and I won't waste any more time, but my only concerns are that we're implementing a fee called a mobility fee while we're seemingly prioritizing, you know, putting roads on diets and increasing landscaping and a lot of wonderful projects that'll make it beautiful around here. But and we're providing a lot of flexibility for the city and how we do that. And then the other flexibility for the city is also scary for a potential developer, especially with those types of things on the horizon and a new mobility fee that's undefined. So we need to be careful. The needs-based approach for factoring in how much you're going to charge a developer on this mobility fee is a little worrisome for me. So,
and I think that's why the policy is flexible, just because it's assumed that there will be a lot of discussion on how the fee is structured and what is the actual basis for it.
And I don't think we can penalize people for the road diets or anything. I think that will go hand in hand with the mobility. So we can't penalize people for doing things that we think are more appropriate with the vision and with the content. Protection there when we build into those policies. We definitely have to get rid of our concurrency system. I think it clearly has not worked. And clearly, we don't want to go into another wave of development with that type of system in place. I'm confident I think we can come up with something. I mean, I know it's been slow statewide. I mean, different jurisdictions have struggled with it. Say getting the county on board is definitely important. We still have this period, you know, with the no impact fees, and I think as we, you know, go through the next 2 years or so, I think we need to work hand in hand with the county to try to come up with something that we might talk about where we're not double dipping. I mean, double dipping and penalizing for the road diets that you know, the complete street model just can't be. So we need to make that aware to BNC and the city council. That's not something that this plan is designed to do.
If it's determined to have, you know, what the criteria will be for assessing the funds that are to be accrued for it. If some of that, if there's an overall traffic plan that includes road diets, traffic calming, traffic circles, overall the overall not just the look but the accessibility of the community And being a business in that community means that you participate in that community, both financially as well as philosophically. So, right, you don't charge people twice, but at the same time, there's a part of, if you're going to get the benefit of all the improvements, then, you know, just like the with the roads, the old concurrency system, add another lane or another turn lane. Well, if you're going to get the business, the benefit of the traffic calming and the landscaping, then it's not out of proportion necessarily to think that you might contribute monetarily to that, you know, to that program too. So it's important to keep the whole thing in mind. No double dipping, but participation and contributing to the overall vision. So,
I mean, one of the key things about the plan is to accept more traffic on the roadways through the land use, the Fleet Street and Bird Diet models. Then we don't need to have those improvements being made through the concurrency or through the impact fees that we have traditionally through the 90s, where every, you know, two lane and a four lane roadway. I think the plan is to try to accept more traffic on the existing roadways, again, moving it more efficiently. Possibly what we're doing with, you know, Wednesday with our 441 corridor study to try to make that roadway more efficient in terms of turning movements and curb cuts and accessibility, but at the same time not really reducing the capacity of the roadway. So I think it's a more innovative approach than to just four-lane every roadway, six-lane every roadway in the city. So that's, I mean, that's day one, that's been the clear vision of this plan, was to try to accept more density and more, you know, more trips into the city without having to go back to the model that we were under before. It's trip and numbered in, you know, you're going to have to, you know, pull in a little bit, or you get close to that.
And it's also important to note that when we talk about mobility fees, yes, you know, some of the fees will go to pedestrian or bike improvements or, you know, some of those types of improvements, but they'll also go to vehicular improvements. And, you know, one of the things that we've been working through with, you know, with the US 441 feasibility analysis is the issue that in a lot of cases, the capacity of the roadway isn't the issue as much as the intersections are the issues. And, you know, if you can improve the intersection, for example, on 441 at State Road 40 or State Road 464, if you can improve the intersection, maybe add an additional turn lane, that would go further to solve some of the gridlock issues as opposed to just continually widening lanes. And for example, on 441, if you narrow it down to four lanes, then you can provide an additional turn lane without having to, you know, add expenses for right-of-way and additional paving. So in a lot of cases, you know, what the mobility fee money will go to are those intersection improvements, as opposed to strictly, you know, where the impact fees are more specific, where they'll specifically go in a lot of cases to just those capacity improvements.
Any other questions?
Very interested to see what happens Wednesday.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Got any comments from the public? Gray? Anything to add? Concerns?
I have a general concern, and that is sort of the process that we're doing here. And I have expressed this before, and thought I had this resolved once and written, but in reality, what we're doing is partially adopting a revised comprehensive plan. And I think as part of the process, and I talked to Gooding about what the real implementation thing is, we're going to have for a time period a situation. situation where you have an adopted future land use map, I would suggest you take the word number 2035 off the land use map. I know that's a target date. But you're going to have an adopted future land use map with really not defined land use classifications and a zoning code that does not match the map whatsoever. The zoning code will still be the old zoning code. The concept here is that they're going to adopt an ordinance that will be a transitional ordinance that will take you through this time period. And I mean, I can only tell you what we're doing on projects we're working on that we candidly know we can get this done. But for instance, on the Magna site project, we're dealing with users that have 6-8 month due diligence periods to look at. The moment site selectors in that world hear that there's going to be a rewrite of the comprehensive plan and the zoning code, you have moved a little bit down on your list unless you can give them some comfort that you can tell them right now what you would be able to do on this piece of property 12 to 18 months from now. And so what we have discussed with the city that project is doing what I would call a freezing agreement. It weirdly enough is exactly what the original intention of the infamous Chapter 163 developers agreements were. The original legislative intent for a Chapter 163 developers agreement was to developers were complaining that the regulations were changing. They buy a piece of land and you could put 10,000 square feet of commercial on it. By the time regulations changed, they were squeezed down. So they originally adopted that section for development agreements in Chapter 163 to allow you to freeze the development regulations as they exist at that moment. And that's what we're going to see. That's what we're going to do on the Magna site project and some others. There is a concern here, I would not opine to an attorney or a bank or anyone that I really understand how this partial adoption is going to work until I see that ordinance. And frankly, I don't get any comfort in the whole process being controlled by an ordinance, because ordinances can be changed by the city with relatively little public input. They can schedule a public hearing, but they don't have what you're having here, which is a sequence of hearings. Usually, if you have a sequence of hearings, if there's real problems, they know what to do, surface somewhere in the process. But I do have a concern about the process. I would much prefer that ultimately, when the future land use map is adopted, with that all the elements be in complete and finished form and adopted. And if that map is inconsistent with the zoning code, I think the zoning code changes should be adopted also. Otherwise, we're going to have a transitional period. So if the transition is going to occur under a city ordinance, I think this is all, none of this really directly in. I think we should see and review that ordinance and put some thought and effort into it and get some input before we get all the way to the stage where we adopt whatever we're working on here now and get into this transitional period. I will tell you, I think the transitional period is unusual. I've talked to fellow practitioners around the state. Most express concerns to me about doing it in this fashion, but it's what we're doing here. So, we can adopt this map and these elements that are here, sort of a partial set of elements. But I think it's going to be very important to the property owners that when we get into how this transitional period works, that it be very defined and very protective of everyone during that period. Because my experience has been in a number of jurisdictions. It is, and we're already behind the schedule. If you look at the original schedule for where we would have been at tonight's hearing, we're well behind where the original schedule was. My in either amendments, but also particularly in complete rewrites of comp plans and zoning codes. You can throw a schedule out there and project it. But once people start seeing a map and they look at it and they think they either know or think that they can no longer do something they can do on their property today, you will find these hearings will start getting a lot of people, and the process will stretch out. It'll slow down. If y'all had had the opportunity to participate in the adoption hearings of the Marion County Comprehensive Plan, gapping over between 1991 and 1992, you would have seen comprehensive plan democracy at work in a fashion, not that it worked. But this is going to be a longer process, I think, than just sending it up on the transmittal hearing, getting it back in the document. Because you're really not there yet with the details that we're waiting for. That's really my comment. I think we're too, you're so far along the process, and I guess this is what we're going to do. But I would urge you to be pushing for us to start looking at how these transitional rules are going to work. Because, you know, people don't want any uncertainty anymore about what's going to, what they can do or not do on their property. My only other comment is that you're experiencing the same thing everybody is on the mobility fee. It was probably a piece of legislature that was, it was rapidly pushed through, and I say this, some friends of mine were involved in drafting it, it was rapidly pushed through because it had a goal. The term seems clever, seems to make sense until you try to do what you were trying to do earlier, which is, what exactly is this and how does it work? But to me, the critical element here, the critical element on the mobility fee is that in this county, where you don't have the city currently collecting transportation impact fees in an area and the county up and doing the same outside of the city, it has absolutely got to be coordinated by the county, with the county. And although the county's currently extended out to the end of 2013, I'll be surprised if they stay suspended through the end, but don't think that these impact fees are not going to come back. Marion County and virtually every governmental entity in the state that has suspended impact fees is about to they're running out of money if they haven't already done so. But it's going to be very critical on mobility fees that that process be very coordinated with the county, or you're going to get all kinds of issues or attempts to generate issues that people are being improperly doubly assessed for the fee. That's it.
Mr. Craig, do you foresee, going back to the earlier discussion about adopting the comp plan so far ahead of the code, do you foresee when development rights maybe there's a question between what the developer believes that he has when he goes in and buys a property and then what it is when he gets rid of the developer? You see that opening the door for a lot of challenges and legal
I think you're only going to, you know, first of all, most of the time, you're only going to have a challenge if someone has a use come up or a potential sale or use of the property and they get into the issue. Most people don't spend their days pondering what they can do on the piece of property they own across the street. It only occurs to them when it's the door. I think part of it is just we need to sort of see exactly how they're going to do this transition. I've talked to Jimmy. He's explained to me his theory on it. I partially agree with it. I've told him my concerns. I don't doubt that Jimmy can create something maybe that can resolve it. But I think it's going to be confusing to people at first. And that always could generate something. But I don't. We are in a, I will say this, locally, there is a lot of in-advanced land use activity underway right now. Nothing that's going to occur tomorrow, but we are seeing a real uptick in that kind of activity. so, but we're not going to have the kind of volume we had during the gold rush. So you're not going to get as many people in. I'm not saying that it can't work, I'm just saying it's going to be a little...
Mr. Gray, is your understanding of how it will work that, I mean, can the city operate under some sort of a global freezing agreement where the old comp plan, the old land use designations remain in place until final adoption of the new comp plan?
I don't know if they could do a global freezing agreement. You know, the reason I want to do a freezing agreement is that if I have a freezing agreement with the city, I have a different legal standing to protect myself than just being a member of the public who is impacted if the city changes an ordinance. I have a special impact. It gives me a little different level of standing. I'm not sure that the city, not having really seen what, you know, what they're planning to, exactly what they're planning to adopt, I'm not sure you could do a global agreement, a global Chapter 163 agreement that would cover all parcels in the city of Oaktown.
I think part of this period of time since March, this was to try to address some of these issues. I think we don't really have the issues that we're forecasting. I don't think there's going to be, from that standpoint, I don't think taking away property rights is going to be the issue. I think there is most consistency there with the existing zoning districts with the new comp plan now. We did it one time before. I mean, total chaos. I mean, we survived it, and that was going to a much more restrictive land use than we are now. So I think we're not going to have the other problems that we had in the past. I don't think we had that many of them. It was about a 6 or 7 month period between the adoption of the comprehensive plan and the land use. So there's always a transition. I mean, there's just no way we can bring it in all together and have just roll it out in one meeting. It's just not easy to do that.
But I think I would agree with that. And I mean, you're always going to miss a parcel. You know, if you go around all the county zoning, we still have numerous parcels in the county that have commercial zoning sitting out in the middle of nowhere with the rural land. The owners, if they haven't really checked on it, think that they could put a convenience store there. You see those kind of areas in county commission USA. So I think, you know, one of the things we need to be careful with here is perhaps having some safety features as you go through the adoptions to give people a defined time period that does not have to be that long within which they could raise questions if they might have some legitimate vested rights issues or something. You normally see those in all these. And those, so if you get those in, you also cut off, you know, if you give people a reasonable time to note that perhaps there's been an error on their property in the assignment, and if you give them a reasonable time to make application or start that process, then you have the ability to cut that off so you don't have this open-ended kind of distraction.
So I think we do feel better than we did back in March in terms of any inconsistencies and then the issue of going back and I was concerned, like Steve was, about trying to adopt a portion of the plan without doing the rest of it. It's just been physically impossible to do that based on the contract, staffing issues, and the whole DCA, DEO process changing. I mean, there's certain things like the housing element, the forward major changes, but none of that is going to really impact the future land use or transportation. And that's what we kind of did in this period, is to make sure that anything that we're doing tonight is really not impacting these elements that stole up in the comprehensive plan, you know, the conservation, the groundwater, and I think we feel better now. Those will have to go through residential and made them into commercial land use that you're seeing. It's going to be on the other side, is surrounding property owners may see that there's more commercial, or the opportunity more commercial than the zoning comes down to where it is. So I think it's more from that standpoint than actually.
As far as development.
Property owner itself.
As far as development rights, it seems to be a lot more latitude with the new plan than with.
I mean, there's certain corridors that would change from either residential or maybe a neighborhood business that possibly would have now a higher intensity.
And providing and keeping the zoning map as it is does provide a good transition because people can understand what is coming up around and what is proposed. So not everything changes overnight. You don't get a new zoning map and a new future land use map. You've got to have to work on some of those issues of how zoning should relate to the future land use categories, which I think are well defined and consistent with the vision.
One of the things that we've done since the March meeting is we did go back and look. In general, there is more flexibility in the land use categories. However, there are certain zoning districts like an M3, which is the heavy industrial district, that, you know, if it's outside of the employment center, wouldn't be allowed in those land use districts. There's certain uses wouldn't be allowed. So what we've done since March is we've gone back and we tried to identify all those areas. And, you know, some of the areas were actually shown on some of the excerpts that we changed the land use to employment center in certain instances. And we also included a grandfathering policy where we'll go back and when we write the code, we'll go back and have specific requirements that if you had M3 before and you want to expand your business, then you'll be allowed to. You know, when I met with Lanny and Steve, we discussed what was done, for example, downtown with Seminole Feed, where it's an industrial use in a business district, but there are some there is some language in our code which says if you have existing industrial uses, you can't expand them. So that was the emphasis behind adding that grandfathering language that, you know, in some cases we'll be able to handle it and fix it as part of the land use. Where we can't, there will still be some grandfathering where they'll have a little bit more flexibility than what you typically have in a grandfathering or non-conforming use situation where you can continue to operate the business as is, but if you want to change it at all, or almost at all, you know, you pretty much have to change the zoning. What we'll do is we'll have more flexibility in these cases because we're making such a wholesale change.
Okay. Any other questions? Bring it back up here for discussion.
I just got a question for Steph. Does the new land use designations, do they become effective upon transmittal or final adoption? Final adoption, right?
Final adoption.
And what, I mean, right now, what's the time frame likely to be with the state?
Well, we're planning, if we transmit it on August 21st, it would go up to the state, and it's about 60 days, 60 to 90 days for it to come back, and then it'll be adopted.
Well, it's
30 days now.
Oh, wow.
So,
yeah. October. The earliest would be October. I think we have a certain time window that we have to adopt it, but more than
yeah,
there's still a 30, 45 day waiting period.
If it's not
after compliance.
But in what the state's going to focus on are how the comp plan affects state facilities and interests. It's a little bit different. Their review process is much shorter than it was before.
Under the old plan, we used to, once we got it back from the state, we didn't really have to adopt it in any time period.
So with the way this is played out and is envisioned to play out from this point on, is the next step rewriting the zoning ordinances, or is the next step to do the other elements of the plan that haven't been addressed, or both?
Both. I mean, and that's more going to be staff working on some of those other element changes, which not going to be total rewrites of, you know, maybe the housing. So there's not total rewrites of that that has to be done as part of the year. We're mostly going to be doing that. VHB has been working the last 6 months working on the code changes that are coming. So you'll be seeing kind of first drafts coming of what some of those changes that we're talking about in these different, like the high intensity area and some of the other corridors that we're coming. But yeah,
I mean, code changes will come in two parts at least. The form-based code changes, VHB, and the conventional code changes, we're going to undertake.
As far as the year, we have 1 year. So basically, our date starts August 1st, and we have 1 year to complete all the year changes. So it has to be done by next time.
More than likely, you'll be seeing some code changes stuff coming, which we've kind of already started some of that. I mean, sort of paring it down, but you'll see a lot more coming in the future.
What, I mean, I keep hearing in the future, sometime, like, what are you talking about? Like, I mean, a couple months, like 6 months?
We'll start seeing some stuff coming in the next couple of months. I mean, some of it may be bits and pieces of it, some of it may be more substantial.
You probably get form-based, you get all of the form-based for the high-intensity district. Mm-hmm. Well, we think you'd get that first, and I would think maybe 2 or 3 months. Then the conventional districts, and we can, you know, probably bring, I don't know, whether we'll workshop them now, and the conceptual districts to you, which would probably be the smartest thing to do so you can get an idea of how the development section for the zoning districts is formatted. We want it to be symmetrical and just have everything exactly the same for each district in the conventional districts. But we're going to cut the zoning districts from 21, 27 to somewhere between 12 and 15. The neighborhood's the hardest one because of the different types of residential. So that's the hardest classification to kind of narrow down and refine. The others are not simple, but they're a lot easier to produce. Residential districts.
Some of the other things will be sign changes, sign code changes, that's one of the other major things.
After?
I mean, the most important stuff is getting the zoning in place.
After transmittal, after the state says grace on whatever portion is transmitted first, is there a sunset prevent? I mean, is there a limited amount of time that the city has to formally adopt it?
Right. That's what I'm saying. There's a period of time that we have to adopt it by, not just let it linger out there. I think we'll be no later than November or December if everything stays on schedule.
Okay.
I'll go ahead and just to further the discussion, I'll go ahead and make a motion for approval of the comp plan text amendments. If there's a second, we can discuss it and then vote it up or down.
I'll second it.
Okay. Have a motion and a second?
Okay. I would just say that I do have some reservations about it. Most of the reservations have to do with development rights. However, because there is this comp plan that's being proposed is more broad, has more latitude, it seems like there is giving more development rights in many regards, that I'm with reservation, I'm willing to go ahead and recommend approval.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Let's go.
Okay. Mr. Howell?
Aye.
Mr. Adams?
Aye.
Mr. Batzel?
Aye.
Mr. Gibney?
Aye.
Motion carries.
All right. I believe that's it. Unless anyone has any really important news they'd like to share. None? Nobody? All right. I could see you over here fishing.
I was, yeah. My whole problem with 2035 is where the hell is the money coming from to do any of the craziness they want to do?
Mobility fees.
There's not enough.
No, I just.
You need it with that.
We need to make sure we have the four voting members available.
Okay.
I'm not here at all.
You're not going to be here on the 13th?
I will not be here on 13th. I've got. Having ACL surgery the Monday night before, that'll be the.
You'll be fine.
Yeah, that's the first day I'm back in the office. So I may show up.
You come in, you're nervous.
I'll be